today we're going to be doing Zayin Amud Aleph, but we were left off on Vav Amud Bet at the two dots about with the first medium wide line. And what we've been talking about is that the Mishnah, besides for prohibiting general commerce between Jews and pagans before their holidays, it also prohibited three additional categories. We talked about there was She'ela, which is when you lend some sort of actual object, or borrow such an object, like a computer. There's Halva, or a Loveh, which is when you lend actual money. That was prohibited. And we had also about paying back or having a pagan pay you back from a loan. All of these were, the question was, I can understand when it's going the direction of you towards the pagan, because then you're causing what we call a harvacha, some sort of profit. As we saw in the Gemara of Amud Aleph, that's going to cause them to want to go and praise their Lord on their pagan holiday. But why should the other side, when it's going from the pagan to the Jew, so it sounds like you're causing them a loss, and why would that be a cause of celebration? So Abaye, one opinion of Abaye was that Enachanami, it's a gzera. And we said, well, what about if it's only rabbinic, how can you make a gzera and a gzera? We quoted the Rashba and Beitza, who says that Abaye does not hold that concept. Abaye thinks that even if it's rabbinic, you can make a gzera out of the gzera. However, Rava said is that this entire thing is that yes, Enachanami, that he thinks that even when it's going in the direction of the pagan to the Jew, there's going to be some sort of harvacha, profit, that it's going to cause jubilation. So, we're actually three lines down from the two dots. So we have these three cases. And it sounds like it's basically the same machlokas over and over again. Therefore, why did the Mishnah have to include all of them? So Gemara says, Vitzricha. I need all three iterations of this machlokas, and Vav and Beis. Ditana l'seis l'tesi mahem, yishun dukom mevarach lehu, v'azol modeh. If we only taught the case of the Mishnah of just general commerce between Jews and pagans, that's prohibited. So I think that's why only that is prohibited, because you're going to cause a profit to them, and then because of that profit, they're going to go come and praise their Lord. But I might think, if I only had, again, the information about commerce, that when it comes to borrowing objects, since I'm taking something away from them, right? I'm borrowing their laptop, they don't have use of their laptop now, that wouldn't lead to some sort of jubilant praising of their pagan deity in their Kamash Malan, that's why they teach it. So this says, well, if I only taught the case of She'ela, that I'm borrowing their computer, so there you might think the reason why that's prohibited is because, you know, wow, the pagan feels I'm so chashuv, I'm so significant, that here this Jew wants to borrow my laptop, this is going to be a source of praise to my deity. They're going to go and praise their Lord. So, but when it comes to borrowing money from them, it's tsar. Why is it tsar? Because Amr Tuvlo Hadri Zuzi, because anytime you engage in some sort of loan, as we know from a short while ago in our economic history, anytime you have a loan, there's always a risk involved because maybe you're not going to get the money back. So too, you might think because of that risk involved, the pagan is going to be unhappy, be very anxious about it, and therefore not use that as an opportunity to praise their God. And if he says about taking a loan from them, that if only tell the case of a loan, she'd say, well, there, you know, because of the power structure and the political situation, so the pagans could say, I can go ahead and compel this Jew in court to pay me back. And therefore, I'm confident I'm going to be able to recover my loan. And therefore, because of that confidence and that excitement about getting, you know, with money and interest and everything that's going to happen, I'm going to go that and make a, and praise the deity. Of Lifra'mehen, but to pay the, but to Lifar Mehen, right, to take their money from them, the Sulo Hadri Zuze Imatsari slave Lazil Moda. They'll say that, well, they're never going to see the money back, and therefore there's going to be tsar, and therefore you wouldn't necessarily think that that would be a case that would lead to the situation of praising their Lord. Kamash Tzicha, therefore we need all three iterations of She'ela, Halva, and Piraon in our Mishnah. So now we're going to add the last part of our Mishnah, which was the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Because Rabbi Yehuda said in our Mishnah, Beis Amud Aleph, that no, you can recover a debt from a pagan before their holiday. Why? Because it's tsar. And the Chachamim's response was, yeah, it's true that right now, in the moment, it's tsar. But after the fact, after they've now recovered, their debt has been paid, and they have that burden has been lifted from their shoulders, so now they'll be happy. So it sounds like the machlokas is, do you focus on the moment, or you look at the bigger picture? So that's going to focus on the question of the Gemara. The Gemara asks, now the next two dots, Is it really the case that Yehuda doesn't have hold of this principle that even though it's painful, it's unenjoyable right now, you'll be joyous later on? V'atanya, we have a brisa in Moed Katam. Rabbi Yehuda says, Ishalo tiso b'moed, v'nishin shenivah hula. Rabbi Yehuda says, anachol ha-moed, a woman can't do with this plaster makeup treatment because it deforms her. Meaning that, what does it mean it deforms her? So Rashi explains, v'nishin nivah hula, that while it's on her face, so it's this sort of like treatment, apparently the lime treatment would make their skin more white. Apparently back then they wanted their skin to be lighter as opposed to today, we wanted our skin to be darker. And it ends up being, after you remove like this lime mask, it then afterwards reddens the face. But it's only after the moed, and since it's causing some sort of disfiguration during the moed, it's going to be Asur Kon Rabbi Yehuda. However, Umod Rabbi Yehuda agrees, Besid sheyachol kaflo b'moed, shetofolaso b'moed, afal b'shemetzor achshav, semech l'achar zman. Rabbi Yehuda says, however, there are some, you know, there's a long-term treatment, like you have a long-term skin treatment that goes on for days, and you have a short-term one. So Rabbi Yehuda says the long-term ones, that's not going to happen. You're not going to see the result during Chol HaMoed. That's Aser. But a short-term one, you know, it's just a day, you know, put it on for a couple of hours or for a day. And already tomorrow, when it's still Chol HaMoed, you're going to have the experience, the simcha, of having the skin that you want. Says Yehuda, that's mutter. So you see from Yehuda's position here in Moed Katan, is that he does hold that concept. That even though it's a tsar right now, a momentary tsar, we look at the bigger picture of when it's going to be a simcha later on Chol HaMoed. So how do you, it sounds like there's a contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in Moed Katan and his opinion here on Vodazar. So Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Hanach Lehilchos Moed, Dekula Meitzer Achshav, Selim Chalachar Zman. You can't bring a proof for, instead of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, giving a proof from Rabbi Yehuda's opinion by Hilchos Chol HaMoed, because everything that's permitted on Chol HaMoed is an example of a momentary displeasure for a long-term pleasure. What does that mean? Rashi gives examples. He says, everything which is permitted on Chol HaMoed is a Meitzar. So the examples he gives are Shechita, Tikkun Seuda, and all these things are permitted. It's a general rule. It's a unique principle due to Hilchos Chol HaMoed. It cannot be extrapolated to his halacha, his approach in Avodah Zarah. Ravina, Amar Ravina says, Ove kochavim l'inin piron ol mitzar. So Ravina, no. The way he answers the contradiction is that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees fundamentally with the what we would call the psychology of pagan debtors. Is that the Chachamim are making an assumption that the pagan debtor will, even though right now, will be upset and distressed that they pay back this loan, but afterwards, they'll be very happy. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that based on a psychological, again, this could be a fascinating, you know, behavioral economic study of really to see who was right, that Rabbi Yehuda says 100% not. That regardless of what happens afterwards, even after the fact that they had to pay the loan to the Jew, again, the biases and whatnot, and they're going to be upset. And that explains to Ravina the seeming contradiction between Avodah Zarah and Moed Katan. So now, the Gemara continues, and says, Masnisa de lo kri b'shub en karcha, that our Mishnah, right, Beis Zman Aleph, is not like the opinion of Shub and Karcha. Which opinion is that? So it says, the Tani, we have a Braisa, that Rabbi Shub and Karcha Omer, Malva b'shtar ein nifra mihen, Malva al peh nifra mihen. So if different, as to why, what's the reason why? B'nei shehu kimitzel miyadam. It says Rishu ben Karcha, you have two different types of loans. You have loans where there's a shtar, there's a legal document that's drawn up. It says, you know, it's like an IOU note, there's witnesses. And so obviously that's something which is, it's admissible in a court. And therefore, it makes the recovery, of such a debt, almost guaranteed. Even obviously with the complexities and the challenges of living as a Jew in a pagan world, but with a court document, even though you see today, you have a court document, you bring it to court, and it makes the recovery of the assets almost guaranteed. And then because of that, says Shulman Karcha, when it comes to the lead up to the pagan holidays, that milva al shtar, that loan, which has a legal document to it, cannot be recovered. However, there's another type, which is that there was no legal argument, there's no legal document. Give you a great example of this. If you go to the Diamond District in New York today, there's no contracts. Everything is, we'll do it today. Here we go. In your hand. Mazel bracha. And you can, anyone, Asian diamond dealers, black diamond dealers, everyone knows in Diamond District in New York, that's how you sign a deal. That's a binding deal in Diamond District. That's how they do it. They shake, they say mazel bracha. So it's actually funny. You'll see, like, people you'd never expect to be saying Mazel Bracha. They're saying, like, he's like businessmen from Taiwan. They go Mazel Bracha, and they just did a diamond deal for like $20 million. So too, you have a Milval Pe. You have an oral loan. There's no document. There's no thing which is admissible in court. So because of that, it makes it's much more risky venture. So therefore, says Rabbi Shimon Karcha, you can recover that debt even during the lead up to the holidays because kimeis l'miyadam. Because it's like you're saving from their hands. Because if you don't take the risk now to get your money back, you never get it back. Now, obviously, what you see from here is another proof that many of the Rishonim bring, is that it must be that the issue of commerce between Jews and pagans leading up to the holidays is only rabbinic. Because if it was an issur d'oraisa to engage in commerce with them, why would the hefsid, why would the potential loss of money be a matir, be a permissive factor to allow for you to recover your debt? It must be, says many Rishonim, that the issue here is only rabbinic. So now we have a nice little story with some important methodology in terms of how to learn halacha. So Yosef, Rabbi Yosef, Achori to Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Yosef was sitting behind Rabbi Abba. But Yosef, Rabbi Abba, kamid Rav Huna. And Rabbi Abba was sitting in front of Rav Huna, Rabbi Yosef, and he was sitting, and he said as follows, V'kamar, hilchasak, Rabbi Shulman Karcha. Right, so we paskin like this idea of Rabbi Shulman Karcha. V'hilchasak, Rabbi Yehuda. And then the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Which Rabbi Yehuda? So hilchasak Rabbi Yishuvin Yeshua had Amran. So the reference to the halacha Yishuvin Karcha is like we just said, the difference between a oral debt and an oral loan and a loan with a legal document that you can recover the oral one even in the lead up to their holiday. But had Amran Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda. What's we're talking about the generic halacha Rabbi Yehuda? The time of the following Mishnah. Hanosin tzemer letzeva tzovea letzvalo. Adom v'tzvo shachor or shachor v'tzvo adom. So you have the following scenario: you have some nice. You're a farmer. You just shore your sheep's wool. You have your. You want to dye it, and you take it to the dyer. And you say, I want you to dye this red, or you say you want to dye it black, and they do the opposite. You say they made a mistake. So the question is, what is the responsibility, the culpability for the dyer in this case? So you flip it out here in Zion Medal. So Rabbi Meir Omer, Meir says, no stain lo demate smaro. Is that what happens, this is Rashi explains in the top Dibri Hamas school, is that the dyer needs to give the owner of the wool the value of the original wool, meaning when it was still white, when it was still white. Why? Because Rabbi Meir holds that if a person veers from the directions and the instructions of the owner, right? So you're an artisan who's given certain instructions of what to make, and you don't do that, so says Meir, you're a gazlan. You're a gazlan. The halacha is by a gazlan, kano b'shinoi. That if there's a shinoi, if there's a change made to the actual item in question, that's actually of a kinyan. So meaning to say that, according to Rabbi Meir, by the fact of your mess up, you are a gazlan, and by your mess up, you actually were now konus. You, the dyer owns the wool, and therefore, what he has to pay him is what he took, which is the original wool in question. However, Rebuta disagrees. He says, "Mashavach yatel yitzia, no sin lo etzel yitzia." He flips it around. The onus isn't on the dyer; it's on the owner of the wool. If, because again, some dyes are more expensive than others. So in this case, let's say that the red dye, very expensive. Black dye, not so expensive. So you wanted black, and he made it red. So now the wool is much more valuable than it would have been. So it says Rabbi Yehuda, if the value now, the increase, the profit of your wool, is more than the expenditure. So as Rashi explains, so you know the dye and the wood, and everything you have to heat up to make the whole process happen. So then, no sasayatsiya. So you give the dyer the expenditures. You have to pay him back. Because now you have what would have been, you know, your wool would have been worth, let's say, $50, and now it's worth $100. So you don't actually, because yeah, you get to have the item, you the owner of the wool, you get this now $100 thing of wool, and you have to pay him the expenditures because now he has a loss. However, if the expenditures is greater than the increase, let's say it's the opposite, right? You wanted red wool, you give black wool. Black wool is much cheaper. So you only have to pay the increase and you have to pay the increase and not the expenditure. So basically what it is that Rehuda says, so that's Rehuda's opinion. So now the Gemara says, wait a second. So Ahadrinu Rav Yosef Lape. So Rav Yosef, because this is important, the structure. So Rav Yosef was sitting with his back to his colleague, and now he turns around to look at him. And he says, what are you talking about? Bishlma halacha Rishum and Karcha Itzrich. Meaning, I understand why you had to tell me the halacha like Rishum and Karcha. Why? I would have thought, in general, we have a principle. We have a machlokas, a minor, one opinion, and a majority opinion. The halacha is like the plurality, the majority. And so, therefore, I understand why you had to tell me the halacha is like Rishum and Karcha, because Rishum and Karcha is the minority opinion. This is an exception to the rule. We pass like Rishum and Karcha. However, why did you have to tell me that this machlok is between Rabbi Meir and Yehuda? Halacha is Rabbi Yehuda. Pshita. It's Pasha. Why is it Pasha? The machlok is Vachar Achstam, Hilchasak Istam. We have another general principle that when you have first a Mishnah that's a machlokes, so in this our case, Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Meir, and then later the Mishnah presents one of the opinions, Kistam, I mean he doesn't break it as a machlokes, it's just one opinion. So the halacha is like the Stam, whoever that may be, whether it's Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yehuda. In this case, it's Rabbi Yehuda. So, where do we see that the Gemara presents it as a machlokes, and then later on this presents it as stam? So the Gemara says, machlokes b'bava kama, v'stam b'bava metzia. That first, this machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Yehuda is written in b'bava kama, and then in b'bava metzia, it presents this case unambiguously like Rabbi Yehuda. How do we know that? It says in the Mishnah b'bava metzia, d'tan, kol meshada yadol tachtona, kol achozer bo yadol tachtona. So we see from here, from this, the beginning of the phrase of the Mishnah, called Mishan Yadot Tachtona, whoever changed something, they have the weaker position. So that's exactly what Yehuda is saying. Is that it's never going to be the dyer, it's not going to be the owner, it's going to be the dyer. The person who changed it, which is the dyer in this case, he has the weaker position, therefore it's going to be much more liable. So the question remains, the question remains of Rav Yosef, why did you have to tell me the halakas of Yehuda? It's obvious. And you could say, well, what do you mean it's obvious? Because as an Amora, as I've heard from Breshach many times, to be an Amora, it means you knew two things, at least, minimally. You knew all of Tanakh by heart, you knew all the Mishnayos. It's clear, if you look throughout Shas, there are a lot of times where an Amora will say, oh, bring a proof from a Brisa, from other, you know, other material, and they don't necessarily know it. Because that wasn't the expectation. Obviously, there are many of the great Gedolim knew all of rabbinic literature, but to be a prophet as an Amora, you knew all of Tanakh and all of Mishnah by heart. So therefore the assumption is, he says to his colleague, you know this stuff. You know that it's first a machlokas and a stam. You know this general rule of machlokas v'achar kach stam, halachik stam. So why are you telling me? Why was it necessary? You're wasting my time. Why are you telling me the halachas of Yehuda? Everyone knows that. So one of the colleagues says, Rav Huna says, Mishum de ain't seder l'mishnah. He says, Rav Huna, no, you can't bring a proof in that principle of machlokas v'achar kach stam because there's no seder to mishnah. Because maybe you say, no, you have it inverted. Maybe the right order is that first there was a stam, and then later on, there actually was clarified, there was actually machlokas about this topic. So now, huh?
So then it's just impossible to have the...
That's exactly what the Gemara says. Ihachi kol machlokas v'achar kach stam, lema insa l'mishnah. So then he said, well, then if that's the case, at any time you could say that. Well, oh, you can't bring a proof from, basically you've now rendered that principle obsolete. Because any time it's going to be, you could say, well, no, really, you think it's machlokes v'achar stam, maybe it's stam v'achar machlokes. So the Gemara says, no, we have to qualify what you mean by that. You don't mean that Rav Huna holds that there's never a seder in the Mishnah. He means it much more specifically. Rav Huna kilo amrinan ein seder b'chara mesechta, v'chir mesechta amrinan. Rav Huna, sorry, Rav Yosef, so says, the Gemara, that Rav Huna meant that whenever you're in one Masechta, so then we'll say, Ein Seder L'Mishnah. But when it comes between two, you'll say there is. So for example, you'll say like, within the Mishnayos of Beitza, or even Avodah Zarah, you can't bring a proof, they would say, from this principle of Machlokas V'Achar Achstam within Avodah Zarah. But let's say there was a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. And then there's a similar mission that comes up in Horios, which is after Avodah Zarah. So from there, you can then say this principle of machlokes v'achar stam. If there was a machlokes presented in Avodah Zarah, and later in Horios it was stam, halach would be like that stam opinion. However, within one mesechta, you couldn't. Yeah.
Can you apply that same principle between Zarim, or would you say that like no one says that like Zarim comes before like Zikin or something?
Right. So I think. That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think that people say that there is a Seder to the Mishnah. That it's all based on the Gemara and Brachos of like Amunah, Zazraim. There is some sort of actual like Seder, but that's a good question. I'm not sure the answer.
Rav Yosef, Kulan Azik and Chadam Sechli. See, he disagrees, because the whole assumption of the other opinion was that the reason why internally you can't say Eitzel and Mishnah, meaning that within one Masechta there's going to be some sort of chronological order, but between Masechtas you could say Eitzel and Mishnah. And so Rav Yosef's response is that Nezikin, meaning Bava Kamba, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, is one Masechta, as opposed to being three, it's actually one. So that's one way you can answer the question. Rav Yisema, alternative, you could say Mishnah Tukatani La Gabi Hichas B'Kasam. No, Rav Yosef's problem was that Rizzo is so obvious, Halachas Rikab Yehuda, because this Mishnah, taught Bava Metzia, was taught amongst other Halachas P'sukos, other decided Halachas. For example, Kol Mishnah Shana Yado Al Tachtona, whoever changes the terms accepted by both parties is at a disadvantage. The Kol Achozer Bo Yado Tachtona, anyone who reneges on an agreement is at a disadvantage. Meaning, this statement appears unrelated to the subject matter of the chapter in which it appears, and therefore it's obvious that this is a halacha psuka, and therefore the halacha is obviously according to like that opinion, which is the opinion of Yehuda. And therefore, it's a second reason the Gemara says, not at all related to the question of Ein Seder L'Mishnah or Yesh Seder L'Mishnah, of why Rav Yosef thought it was obvious Halacha Shel Beker B'Yehuda, and why he thought it was weird that his colleague mentioned this halacha because it was so obvious to him. So now that we mentioned a halacha where even though Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha was the minority, the halacha was like him, we mentioned another example of where Machlokes between Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha and his colleagues and nevertheless halacha is like him. Tan Rabbanan Mitzvah Lo Yomer Adam L'Chaviru Haniru Shetamanim Be'erev. Chachamim say that a person cannot say to his friend, a Jew, on Shabbos, "Oh, stay with me till the evening." And the assumption being that what's being communicated here, what's being hinted to, is that come do malacha for me after Shabbos. It also presumably violates davar davar, the type of speech that's prohibited on Shabbos, that you're sort of thinking about malacha. Rabbi Shimon Karcha says, Omer la'adam chaviro hanir shami la'arev. He thinks that it's permitted. Why is it permitted? Presumably because he thinks it doesn't violate, because it's a hint, it's not direct, it's maybe it doesn't violate amir la'akum, and therefore, because it's a Jew, and therefore it's permitted to say to a Jew, that stay with me here on Shabbos till after Shabbos, and then the assumption being is you're going to do malacha for me. And Amr Abba Rechana, again, another example here, Amr Yochanan, Rav Yochanan, Hilchos Halacha Rabbi Shimon Karcha. In this case, Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Karcha, not like his rabbinic colleague.